As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The Score Midday Show.
Make it sexy.
It's the legendary Chuck Swirsky in studio with us here on Score Middays. This man looking like he's about to head to the home opener for the Bears.
Yes.
Are you just already transitioning season?
Is that what I am. I'm a huge Bears fan. I'm just Joe Bag of Donuts.
There it is.
Okay.
Bag of Donuts is here.
I need the story.
He's here.
Caleb Williams was at the game the other night, and I missed that, by the way, because I was locked in with the Bulls.
So I always throw the football out.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Got it up to second level. Wow. That was a toss. Charlie, I've only seen one other person do that, and that was you.
Well, Bill.
Back to these Bulls.
Yes.
How crushed were you?
Well, I mean, it was very tough. And, you know, to be quite candid with you, when I got home, I was so depressed that I drank 5 liters of Mr. Pibb.
5 liters?
Ryan
Porth has entered the building.
There you go.
It's a bag of donuts.
Ryan Porth,
it's a bag of
man.
Donuts.
Porth
did a great
per
job.
Request.
Put him in the Hall of Fame. Put him in the Hall. I'm just 2 bag of donuts.
The Score Midday Show. Middays 10 to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hello and happy draft week. We broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is the Score Midday Show. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, you and our producing crew. Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, and Brandon Fryer. And then our Score video team. You can log on and see us there, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Connor O'Donnell, Jenna Duddleston, and Matt Anaya. And as we observe draft week, Marshall Harris, I think to myself, this would be a bigger deal if it wasn't for the fact that the Bears hired Ben Johnson. So I'm okay with the fact that they have a top 10 pick not being a huge discussion in comparison to trying to figure out what this head coach is going to do with it. We actually get all of our speculation wrapped up and finally have something on Thursday.
Did we ever figure out who has final say? Do we ever figure out who has final say? Is it Ryan Poles? Like, do you believe in your heart of hearts that Ryan Poles is going to be the person who says, this is who we're taking? And if there's a debate, we'll call it a debate, between people in that room at that time, will it be Ryan Poles saying, this is who we're taking, stamp? Or will it be Ben Johnson doing that same thing?
Like, who has final say?
Yeah, I wonder who has final say.
I think it's probably still Ryan Poles.
Okay. I'm accepting that. I'm not comfortable with it. I'm not saying I'm good with it. But if that's the answer, that's the answer. But Ben Johnson knew what he was signing up for. He knew that he wanted to be the head coach of the Chicago Bears. And he knew that he was comfortable enough with Ryan Poles as his partner, so to speak, that this is what it is. And you hope they're on the same page. I would argue since the start of free agency or even before then when they made the trades, they seem like they are in lockstep. But I just know in that draft room, people aren't always in lockstep. So that's like my biggest question coming into this week. Not who they're going to take at 10, because I think they're going to get 3 to 4 impact players, if not day one starters, with those first four picks.
I mean, that's it. It's not even who has final say. It's that whoever has final say actually has a lot of work that they have to do.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part is I feel like we're at a place where you're saying to yourself, oh, well, these are the players. This is who we know is on the team. You know, we know that the Bears had to make a lot of improvements. Offensive line is the best example. Now the devil is in the details. Now you're trying to figure out who's not good enough to be on a playoff team. Like, this is where it gets tough. This is where you're going to have to ask yourself, is a rookie I'm drafting a better fit at a certain position? Is he a better fit in the offense that we're going to see? Is it that the function of the offense limited people's skill sets that you thought were previously very high-skilled players or better at their position, relatively speaking? That's the difficult part. And then the question of, do you trust this front office with that decision still?
And with that development. And do you trust that they can identify a left tackle and be okay if he can only play left guard and they can do enough vetting beforehand to know the difference?
The Bears, whether or not anybody wants to acknowledge this, were 15-36 over the last 3 years. Last season is the best example of development and trying to figure out if these people are good enough. Ben Johnson was brought in, we know, because the team on the field and the decisions on the field that were made were not the same. Like, the decisions on the field did lose them games. Okay, all of that said, then how much difference is he going to make when it comes to saying, these are the people I need for this team to work? And that's Dennis Allen, too, in my opinion. That's Dennis Allen's head coaching experience. That's how he views his defense. That's him saying, these are the things he needs. But the good news is, as we have discussed, thanks to savvy free agent moves where they did acquire what they needed by position, they put themselves in a better one to say, we like this individual here. So I'm okay with that. It's just when you consider the fact that we would have been talking about the number 10 overall pick in the draft the entire time. We didn't, because we've got the piece of the new head coach and how this fits together. The good news is, hopefully, we're not talking about a top 10 pick next year.
Unless it's through a trade.
That's my hope.
That's a lot of hoping you're doing right there.
I know. History would dictate that might not be the case. And again, we want to let you know that Who's Your Guy is back. It begins at 11 o'clock. You have to call in, by the way, 312-644-6767 in an hour. So please keep that in mind. We text Who's Your Guys is very difficult. We can't keep track of them. I'm sorry, guys. It just doesn't always work that way. You don't get the medium you want necessarily.
So we're not taking Who's Your Guy through text. We're taking phone calls only.
Yes.
Okay. I was making sure. That's what I thought. I just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah, it's your first Who's Your Guy.
It's my first Who's Your Guy. I'm excited. I want to read about what you guys want to hear about. So I'm here to give the people what they want.
Yeah. And frankly, it's a good way to just read up on people. I want to know their strengths, their weaknesses, and what drop goes with them audio-wise. I think David Silverstein this morning brought up a really good point. From our lads. They do such a great job with the draft. I always love when they're on with Mully and Haw. They really kind of set the tone for not only draft week, but understanding value, relative value, how they see the draft overall, what they see the Bears doing. These are the mock drafts that I do pay a little more attention to if they're not mock draft number 7 or something, because you do get a little more understanding of what teams might do. So he also talked about the importance of tight end for the Bears. And we've examined it more as we start to get to this point. But I want to bring up his comparison of what he thought of some familiar names that we know in the upcoming draft regarding the tight end class.
This is probably macro level one of the best tight end groups I've ever seen. And I mean that. They're top heavy. They have two stars and Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. Mm-hmm. And a guy that I personally have right there with them is Terrence Ferguson. He won't be drafted as high. But in 3 years, I think we're talking about Terrence Ferguson in the same exact breath as both Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland. And these are guys, they're new age tight ends, meaning they can split out, they can line up with their hand in the dirt, they can make plays on all levels of the passing tree, but they're also demons after the catch. I mean, that's where I love Warren and Ferguson especially. They put up yard after catch numbers similar to what we saw Brock Bowers do, which helped make him an all-pro as a rookie and set records. Colson Loveland is not as physical as those guys, but he's got a lot more wider catch radius, a little bit more nimble, and he's a little more dangerous when it comes to getting the ball away from his body. But those three names, Tyler Warren, Colson Loveland, Terrence Ferguson, those guys could start for me tomorrow.
That is a ringing endorsement from a guy who I trust when it comes to draft and player evaluation. So if you are really set on the tight end prospect for the Bears and the Ben Johnson offense dictating this concept, then I think that that was a really uplifting thing to hear. But here's the funny part. You know who he has in his latest mock draft going to the Bears?
Armon Mimbu.
Will Campbell.
Is it? Oh, it's been updated. Well, the last time I looked, it was Mimbu, but okay.
Same idea.
Yeah. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I love the offensive line to a fault. So, yes, absolutely. I would love more offensive line help for the team. But then there was also a big discussion about the possibility of Mason Graham moving. And I think what this just really shows is how he said this too. All of the draft experts that we have talked to say it's a handful of prospects that are going to really move the needle when it comes to no-doubter guys based on their metrics and their measurements. We know that those don't always work out either, but it, the blue chip guys, and then everybody else is some sort of relative equal, like 5 through 50. So if that's the case, are you happy with what would be available to the Bears at that number 10 overall pick? So that's the real question, I think. Unless they are absolutely dead set on a player and trying to move up and trading one of those, I think, really valuable top four in the 72s to get up. You know, I don't know.
So I go back and forth on the idea of trading up, right? So obviously if you're trading up, you're getting one of those blue chip guys, one of the top five or six players in the draft that if you go through all of the mock experts, the NFL analysts, they have like the same five or six players as cannot miss prospects. And not that the rest aren't can't miss, they're just not as elite impact playmakers as those top five or six. If you trade up to get one of those guys, he has to be outstanding in his rookie. They have to be in the rookie of the year conversation, especially if it's a skill position player. If you trade down, I kind of like that better, because if you can acquire more assets, understanding best player available, and understanding that there's a long run on that next tier all the way to the back half of the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I like that better because you're getting more bang for your buck, especially if you know what you're doing and pick the guy you actually want at 12 or 13 or 14, or whoever's trading up.
I'm a big believer in when in doubt, do nothing. So when you have a good set of draft capital and draft picks to work with, and you unfortunately may have more needs than we realize because we like certain people, or maybe I'm thinking about depth, then I think it's okay for the Bears, just kind of like the rest of the league as we have seen, to not have much action trade-wise when it comes to pick swapping.
Well, we haven't had any action trade-wise, which is very rare this close to the draft. And maybe that changes with, and you would hope if you're the Bears, somebody's trading up to the top nine to get a quarterback. That's the hope. Shedeur Sanders, and kind of a prayer here, but maybe a Hail Mary of Shedeur Sanders and Jaxson Dart? Probably
That's
not going to happen.
Jaxson Dart's position in this draft has been all over the place. So you're really trying to figure out who values him and how. And if it is a situation where some team waits because they know he might drop, like the need for the quarterback will motivate a team to trade more. But right. I also think the desire for Ashton Jeanty will motivate teams more. This is the Score Midday Show. Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi, as we talk about the NFL draft, which is finally here, almost.
I was going to say, it's not quite here. Tomorrow we'll say we're in the hole.
3 days.
And then Wednesday we'll say we're on deck. And then Thursday is batter up. not to mix up my
sports.
Is that
our promo language? Are we going with that officially?
No, I don't think we're going with that officially. I don't think that's been approved by management. But I will say this. I'm as excited about this draft as I think I have been since I moved to Chicago, mainly because even though last year you had the two top 10 picks, you knew who number one was. So there was a kind of, I know what's coming. I don't know what's coming. I like the idea that not only did I not know what's coming, but with the multiple picks in the top 70 or so, I mean, that's a chance for you to get a lot better in a two-day period.
Someone with higher standards would argue perhaps the Bears need to improve at virtually any position you think of.
Yes.
Some would say that they need to also just fill in specific gaps and what they absolutely have to have. Silverstein had more on the Will Campbell discussion. I know Robbie just got that audio in, so let's check it out.
Congratulations, you guys have Will Campbell, offensive tackle from LSU. Oh, and I'm going to tell you what.
That's a win.
This is going to be a bigger surprise for you. We have Armin Membu and Will Campbell both being available at 10 overall. And I think they go, I mean, based on who you talk to, I mean, I don't have these guys graded far apart at all. But what I like about Will Campbell is that he's already proven at left tackle. And Armin Membu, we think he can play on that side, but he's never done it. He's a right tackle. I even think he might want to start off at guard. Will Campbell, to me, you give him a look at left tackle. If you feel better about putting that guard down the road, I think you have to try him out there. I know his size metrics, wingspan and length in particular, are off the chart bad. Wingspan differential, a new number that I think you guys are going to hear more and more about. That's wingspan compared to how tall they are. And that number that he has, it's very small. It's very scary. But his fallback is he'll be a very good guard. But I think you put him at left tackle ASAP, let Braxton Jones be a swing tackle, which is one of the most overlooked components to building a roster in the NFL. It ruins teams every single year. The Bears are set if they do that.
Here's what I like about this concept. Number one, it sends Will Campbell to the Bears. Number two, it sends Will Campbell to the Bears.
What's number three?
Number three is to go from the line that the Bears had last season to the concept of the Bears having riches on the offensive line, where they have depth that you want, where you feel good about it, where you feel good about the people who are playing, where maybe there's a plan for the future once a guy like Joe Tooney does decide to retire. You know, Kansas City implemented that. That was kind of what got this started. That is a wonderful thing to even think about, where you're so positionally deep at something that directly affects everything around the team that you would be happy and content with blue chip guys, one of the top draft picks, all of that ready for you, where you actually have significant depth, where a guy you thought was a starter might actually be now a backup. That's when you know you've leveled up.
David Silverstein, he made reference to this when he talked about the riches and the idea of Braxton Jones as a swing tackle. I look at offensive line specifically in the same way that you feeling good about, I saved up a little money and you're doing well, but you know what? You should always have that emergency fund specifically for your car. Because let me tell you something, that car is going to cost you some money at some point. The offensive line is going to cost you bodies at some point in the NFL season. That's why you have to have the riches that you speak of, because when you thought you were rich, you're not rich, you're just getting by.
Kind of like a backup quarterback who had significant starting experience.
Yes.
You need your sixth man to have significant starting experience.
He's going to play. How rare is it that all five offensive linemen play all 17 games? That just doesn't happen.
No, and certainly not with the Bears. I like this comment from Twitch too, Hologram Harry. Braxton as a swing guy makes me comfortable. That's it. It's that feeling of knowing that your plan has you feeling calm. And I don't know what that feels like.
That's how they're feeling in on the life. Text line too. 815, Braxton Jones, swing tackle, possible future guard. Everyone has seen enough of Braxton Jones to be like, all right, in a backup role, aka he might be forced into starting, but that's okay. People are okay with that. They're way more comfortable than other guys that you could bring in off the street.
And yeah, you're right, 815. Hilarious the difference in takes. Mel Kiper is both Campbell and Membu gone in the top seven. This is not shade on Mel Kiper. But I am really glad that we are to a position in our society where we have multiple draft experts that we can choose from and listen to and compare and contrast.
It was Mel Kiper for a long time. Before social media exists, you didn't know where to find the information that you needed.
So much so to a fault, you know, in previous reports, as we know. But it is really cool when you think about how far we've come as a draft society to where we are at this point where, you know, we can have all these different discussions. It just really comes down to the problem being all those teams that are ahead of the Bears also have multiple needs. So you're trying to figure out.
That's why this is exciting this week. I don't know what's going to happen. That's what makes it fun. Surprise me.
Yeah, that's it. And also, I appreciate all the questions that people have sent in. They are really great. We also have to talk about the Cubs weekend that played out like a movie. What a ridiculous set of events that have happened since the last time I talked to you. This time, you know, last Friday, my how things have changed in good ways. We will discuss the Cubs coming up and take a look at that offense. It's going well. That's next on the Midday Show on The Score.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
A swing and a high fly ball. Deep left center. Back toward the wall. It's got a chance. Gone. Game on. A three-run homer by Carson Kelly. And it's an 11-10 ball game. It's a drive into right field and deep. It's got a chance. Gone. The Cubs have taken the lead. Can you believe it? Pop fly, shallow left. Swanson out. He's got it. And the Cubs win the ball game.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
Ah, the natural music. What an amazing series the Cubs had over the weekend. Of course, that's Pat and Ron on the call with us. Cubs are off today. They play tomorrow, beginning a two-game series against the Dodgers again. I feel like the Cubs have just played like Padres, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Padres, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, Padres, Dodgers. And that's been the season so far.
The fact that they've had to see the Dodgers on three separate occasions, starting tomorrow, will be the third time they've had to see them in a different series. That's crazy. Technically, it's the continuation of that opening series over in Japan. But come on, man. Aren't you tired of seeing the Dodgers? Aren't you tired of the NL West? You still haven't even seen the Giants yet. But you haven't seen the Rockies either, which that's a good thing.
Yeah, except you just don't want to have what happened a couple years ago where you see them and then you think it's going to be a W.
Come on, man.
And then you don't make the playoffs.
Have you seen the Rockies this year? Because I have. I mean, well, highlights anyway.
It doesn't matter. It's not the case right now because Chris Bryant is on the IL with that degenerative spine condition, which is terrifying. But he's had a couple of just well-timed home runs against his former team the past couple of years.
All I know is we left the studio on Friday thinking, okay, if they can find a way to get 2 out of 3, it'll be great.
Ain't bad.
And they won the first two games just to let you know, hey, we're going to get the 2 out of 3. Now, they didn't win the third game. It went to extras. They were able to rally once in the bottom of the 10th, but not in the bottom of the 11th. But overall, you got to be looking at a team. I don't think I've ever been as, oh, okay, about a 14-10 team.
Hold on. What are you talking about? It wasn't just like that. No, you just summarized like the most events in the shortest amount of time.
Well, I know we're going to go back over the individual games
themselves.
They beat
the Diamondbacks 13-11 in one of those games that you're going to remember. There's a category of games I like to call like regular season games you actually remember. That's one of those.
So you're saying when you're dealing with a 2-1 game heading into the bottom of the 7th and it ends up being the most runs scored ever. Like, it's insane what happened on Friday.
And then you beat the Diamondbacks 6-2 on Saturday on Speedy Picro Armstrong bobblehead day. Can somebody report back? I would like to know what that bobblehead looks like in person.
Ask Caleb Williams. He got one.
I actually have seen it before. It is really awesome. You can take the helmet off. It is detachable. And his feet, behind him, there's blue flames. So it looks pretty
blue
sweet.
Blue flames?
So it looks like he's flying. Like, you know, he's like running really fast.
That's so cute.
On the hot scale, blue is hotter than red, right?
Theoretically.
Correct. So,
like white hot is the hottest, right?
And if you're looking at the radar and the middle of something is white and everything else around it is like red and darker red and even purple, something bad is happening. There was a lot of radar watching yesterday, I noticed. I was trying to watch the show on Fox 32. It was Gabe, Cassie Carlson, and Tina Wynn, and the radar in the corner was bothering me. I just hate it when they break into the entire show with a radar. I get it. You need to save lives.
It's all about the severe weather, right?
I want my stories. So, yes, that was trying to keep up when I had a meeting that I couldn't watch the game live was infuriating because I was in an office and I'm like, wait, the Cubs were up what? Now they're down what? And what happened? And now they scored how many runs? The Diamondbacks did what in the eighth? They scored 10 runs in the eighth. I'm like, oh, well, this is over. Nope, Cubs score six. And I'm like, what? These aren't real updates. Like, this isn't a real discussion I'm having with people right now.
Let me give you some things from okay, just Friday.
Trying to follow that from afar was the most frustrating effort because I didn't believe anybody.
First off, shout out to the starting pitchers, okay? Like, can we acknowledge the work that the starting pitchers did in that game? Because we know what the conditions were, and they were like, I don't care. Corbin Burnes, 2 runs over 6 innings. Colin Ray, 1 run over 4 2/3.
You did your job, guys. You tried.
No,
you tried, and then everybody else just kept happening.
The fact that they did what they did in spite of those weather conditions cannot be overlooked. That's why I'm mentioning that off the top. But here's some facts from this game.
And then, the skies just turned darker and darker and more ominous.
The Cubs allowed at least 11 runs in a game and won for the first time since August 21st, 2019. The Cubs homered 5 times in a game for the first time since last year, July 14th. The Cubs hit their second set of back-to-back homers this season in the eighth inning. And they did that against the Athletics at first. And guys just went off in this game. And Carson Kelly, have yourself a season.
Carson Kelly, have yourself a month, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be in the running for NL Player of the Month, right?
I think you have to get Player of the Week at least one of those weeks to get month. But no, let's do it. Let's talk about it. What he's doing is impressive.
He's got 6 home runs. He leads all major league catchers with 18 RBI, ranks second with 6 home runs, and he doesn't play full time. He's splitting with
Miguel Amaya.
And so to watch what the offense has been able to do, and you could argue they are the best offense in baseball, despite losing yesterday.
They are in many categories, actually.
Yeah. So looking at that, I'm just amazed at the way the series started, the fact they backed it up with a win on Saturday, and we're in the running to get another win and a sweep on Sunday.
Let's enjoy this because there have been so many times where they haven't.
Fair.
The Cubs right now are tops in Major League Baseball in runs per game. That's right. Your Chicago Cubs lead the league in runs per game. They lead the league in total runs, therefore. Extra base hits. That's the one that got me. They already have 85 extra base hits. That is the overwhelming difference in what we have seen this year compared to others in the past. You cannot tell me protection in the lineup doesn't matter. I am living it right now.
To get the type of production they're getting from the bottom of the order, Carson Kelly, we just mentioned, but also, obviously, when you talk about Pete Crow Armstrong and what he's been able to do since getting off to a slower start, right? He's been phenomenal. He's made plays both in the outfield and at the plate and with his feet once he gets on the base paths. He has continued what we saw in the back half of last season, and I said it once. And this won't be the first, the last, or this is one of those in-between times. Pay that man his money.
If you can, it's like you said in the meeting, if 7-8-9 are hitting, you are living good. That's it. If you know that you can score runs with 2 outs, your runners in scoring position numbers go up. Like, I can't tell you already how many times this season I'm like, oh, that was a 2-out hit. Oh, that was nice. That was a 2-out hit. I feel like there were so many times where once you got to 2 outs, to the number 6 hitter in the lineup, it was hoping to see something rather than potentially expecting. And you're seeing that in the difference in the numbers. Cubs are 4th with runners in scoring position for batting average. They are, of course, 2nd in walks because that's what they do. They walk. But then to be 3rd in home runs, all of that adds up to what you're seeing. All of that adds up to them having this record against some of the best teams in baseball. And we haven't even talked about some things that have concerned people, and that's understandable. This is what happens when you have a good team. It's just like the last segment where I'm talking about guys I thought who were starters being backups. This is the same concept. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi here on the Midday Show on The Score. And I appreciate that Jamison Tyone, even in this series, Marshall, said what I said going in on Thursday about who they were facing.
I mean, we're in a pretty good spot. And, like, we faced a lot of really good starting pitching, and I think we have the most runs scored in baseball, which is pretty cool. Like, it seems like every time I look at the schedule, it's like, oh, coming up, you know, we have Corbin Burns, Zach Gallen, and Merrill Kelly. Like, those are three really dang good MLB starting pitchers, and we come out of here still with a series win. We faced great arms, great lineups, and just I think we can play with anybody. So just a good reminder there.
So there are a lot of stats to pick from if you're a Cubs fan right now and that you want to hang your hat on, right? Whether it's an individual stat, some of the team stats you just mentioned. But I think the biggest glaring stat concerning the Cubs 24 games into the season is this. The Cubs' opponent winning percentage is 636.
Yowza.
636. The next highest team is the San Francisco Giants at 554. So you're nearly 100 points more on the opposition that you've had to face and how often they win a game. And I think that speaks to, you can say, oh, but they're only 14-10. They only have a game lead in the division over the Milwaukee Brewers, who they will see in a couple of weeks. But overall, to know they've gotten past this point in the schedule where they've seen the Diamondbacks for their season's worth of meetings, and they went 4-3. They've seen the Padres for their season worth of meetings, and they went 3-3. They've got two games left against the Dodgers, and they're done with them, and they're 2-3. And if they can find a way to get a two-game sweep, then they will have a winning record against the Dodgers. They've seen the Rangers 2-1. And of course, we all remember what they did to the Athletics in Sacramento. So to see the series that they have played and the results that have been yielded, you cannot say that you're not happy with where the Cubs are as we stand today.
And we're not saying that there are not flaws in other pieces of the game to discuss. Like 224 is like, please talk about the terrible bullpen. I'm cooking up a segment for tomorrow's show that kind of addresses the things that we've seen so far. But at the same time, we have not been able to talk about this type of production and what we're seeing out of this team in this way. And you've got to be able to appreciate what that was, especially against this Diamondbacks team. Every game that they've lost this season, you're saying that was a winnable game, and here's why.
That's
even the ones
thing
where the margin is huge. It's just a totally different feeling when you know you can watch a team with two outs or with, you know, the eight hitter coming up, knowing I'm okay with this.
Yeah, it's not as easy as, you know, even going back to pre-DH times in the National League, where you'd be like, oh, you get to, you know, get the nine hitter out, turn over the order. However you want to look at it, with the Cubs, as you said before, that 7-8-9, you can't take that for granted. They can hurt you just as much as 4-5-6, you could argue.
Well, and it's other pieces of it, too. You want a team that has one aspect of their team, whether it's defense, and I think the defense needs work, or the offense, or starting pitching, or bullpen. Somebody's got to be the one. One of those units has to be picking up another when there's a deficiency. No team is absolutely perfectly complete, and even the GMs who think they have them, Dodgers, for example, are still going to try to get more. That's just how that mode works, and we know that just by past observation in baseball. But what we're seeing right now when it comes to having confidence, knowing that they're going to try to win this game, or they have the players necessary to still have to have you thinking you're going to be in the game, knowing that if the bullpen falters, somebody's going to hit you out of it. It's just a very different aspect of seeing what we're seeing on the field.
The easy response to anybody criticizing what the Cubs are doing as far as the shortcomings is, it's okay, and it's going to be okay, and they're going to hopefully add more pieces to make it okay. Now, if they don't, we can address that as we get deeper in the season.
I don't think that that's happening.
You don't think that's going to happen, though? I'm not saying it has happened, but I like what they did with the relievers, going to get more help. Like, we'll figure out whose arms deserve to be up here.
We might be talking about a very stressed bullpen, even at the trade deadline, based on what we've seen. Like, there's the loss of Justin Steele is now de facto falling on the bullpen, and you're seeing what's happening there. So I don't know that. I don't know that it's going to be okay. I'm appreciating what I'm seeing right now.
Well, I guess first you have to establish what does okay mean to you. Like first thing is just get to the playoffs. I think that's when I say they're going to be okay. I think they're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, we have all season to talk about it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to what I've seen over the weekend, like that's how you try to win. If you're taking 2 of 3 in the third game, you know you could have won, then you're in a much better spot. We want to delve in a little bit more to the Cubs conversation. That is coming up next on The Score. It's the Midday Show. Marshall Harris and Leila Rahimi.
Here comes the 2-2. Swung on and hit deep to left center. This ball's got a chance. Gone! Carson Kelly, a 2-run homer. Cubs lead 2-0.
Have you had a stretch like this personally?
Not that I can think of.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
Amen, Carson Kelly. Not that he can think of. Cubs have the day off today. They resume action tomorrow against the Dodgers for a 2-game set at home. And we get to talk about a Cubs team that just took 2 of 3 from the Diamondbacks over the weekend. This is the Midday Show on The Score. Marshall Harris and Leila Rahimi. And as wild as that series was, I know there are some pieces of it we want to further examine, but I think we should also listen to just how the players feel about the current state of their team. Let's listen to Ben Brown after the game on Saturday talking about the Cubs lineup.
Yeah, I believe we were the best lineup in the National League. Our guys are just, and just before I start on that, our guys have just been doing an incredible job. I do truly believe we have one of the most in top to bottom, just thorough, great offenses in baseball, and kudos to them for putting up runs, especially off of my first inning, and just makes things a little bit easier out there when constantly you're in every game.
And that's easy for Ben Brown to say. Unfortunately, I would like to see him, you know, go longer than just 4 innings on Saturday against the Diamondbacks. They won 6-2. Brown threw 100 pitches, and that's why, of course, he's leaving after 4. But he's right. I think it's better for everyone when you know your offense can produce to make your life a little easier at your respective position.
What I like about it is if you're a pitcher, you talk about confidence on the mound, right? Because no one's perfect. You're going to give up hits. You're going to give up runs. But the confidence of knowing that if you do give up a home run, if you do give up an RBI single, chances are it's not like your team's going to put up a 1, or it's going to be a crooked number that the Cubs eventually put up. So you're pitching with a different level of freedom, especially if you get that run support early. You know, just throw strikes. Don't walk people. Just throw strikes. It's a little different for the bullpen than it is for the starters, but you get my general drift here. And I think we're seeing that in the way that these guys have been pitching, specifically a guy who's at the back end of the rotation like a Ben Brown. He's young. He's got not as many pitches as everybody else, but he's finding a way to make it work, in part because he's throwing strikes and he's letting the guys who feel behind him also hit for him when they're at the plate.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to a bigger element of when more parts of your team are good. You just have a little more breathing room. Guys aren't as pressuring themselves, whether they're at the plate, whether on the mound, or in the field. If you make a mistake, it's okay because you know that that might not be what costs you the game. That's not how people should feel. But unfortunately, that's just what happens on teams that aren't good enough. We're focused on minutia a little bit more because that was the difference that the Cubs needed to have. It's like when they faced the Dodgers the last time, especially even in Tokyo, where when you only manage 3 hits in the first game, and they only had 4 yesterday. But you're not thinking about it as much because of the 2 other games.
You're putting up big runs, big numbers. And it's so funny that you mentioned Tokyo. How long ago does that seem, by the way?
Months.
So much has transpired. And you can talk about the good, the bad. You talk about the bullpen. You can talk about Justin Steele. You can talk about call-ups. You can talk about Matt Shaw no longer being on the big league roster. I mean, there's a lot that has happened. But the most important thing that has happened is that the Cubs have won 14 of their first 24 games, and they sit in first place right now, and they beat a bunch of other teams who are contending for the playoffs. And they have you believing that they can contend. Far from a finished product. They have lots of things to work on. I think where we talk about relief as being like the main thing, man, that defense is sneaking up there for me to go not neck and neck, but it has become a bigger concern than I thought it would be here a month into the season.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely fielding issues on this team. And I don't know if it's fits. I don't know if it's guys playing positions where they don't have the most of their experience. For example, like we know Justin Turner has played a lot more at third base than he did at first, even though first is what he's done recently. Yeah, all of that matters when you're trying to figure out patterns and habits of everybody. We know, for example, Dansby Swanson, who isn't batting well right now. You can call it hitting into hard luck. You can call it not producing, but either way, the stats are what they are right now. You know, we know he likes to cover a lot of ground. Okay, so what does that mean? Whose ball is it? You know, is there a standard operating procedure there when he's running around on the field and he's covering the ground that he thinks he can? Is it his ball every time? How does that work? Ian Happ told us about a fielding situation where you see three guys and the ball drops in front of you, but you don't want that, especially not against these teams, and especially not when you don't know what the margin is going to be for making a run for the playoffs. Those are the things where you're asking yourself questions. But the nice part is you don't have to dwell on it too much because you've got guys hitting right now in the lineup consistently.
The lineup has been consistent. Some of the individuals have not. You mentioned Dansby Swanson. What's your level of concern? I'm not that concerned, but I am a bit concerned. What is your level of concern for Dansby Swanson and his lack of productivity at the plate?
I think when the guy that you need the most, you know, monetarily is not producing and it's not a top headline of your team, that is a good thing. If that makes sense. He's got room to grow. He's up to 177 now. I hate that I'm saying up to, but you're not as worried about it because other people are doing such work. When you've got a guy with over 1,000 OPS batting second, and a guy with an 888 OPS batting third, and a guy with a 994 OPS batting fourth.
Is that good?
I am not as concerned about the deficiency right now. And the number five hitter. If this is a season-long thing after what we saw last year we thought was a result of injury, that's a different discussion.
I think that's a discussion we'll have to have down the road. I think 24 games in, it's a sizable piece. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think that's a time where you say, okay, this is a failed thing. I mean, it's interesting because obviously that's a very different situation, the one Dansby Swanson's in because of his contract, because of his role on this team, compared to, say, a Matt Shaw. And I will say this, Swanson has looked okay at times, and then he's looked not okay. And I'm trying to figure out which one's the real Dansby Swanson.
Well, I mean, he's got good contact. It's just the problem is he's, you know, we say the phrase, hit him where they ain't, he's hit him where they were.
That seems problematic in this particular sport and how the sport's supposed to be played.
Right, and now we know that what would that look like with a shift, you know, when the shift was still legal.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm glad it's illegal. We don't even think about it. It's like we all deleted that from our memories.
Things that I deleted was the fact that you used to be able to call in a reliever for every single guy that comes up to the plate, and that you also have no shifts. I forgot about that from time to time. I just forget about it.
I had a good laugh when I was sitting there trying to figure out how much time I was going to spend to try to watch the Cubs game after the 39-minute rain delay and the 58-minute rain delay. And as I'm watching the game, I'm like, oh, yeah, regular season games used to be 4 hours sometimes. I would sit through them.
Yankees, Red Sox? No.
Sox, Twins. Sox, Twins, for whatever reason, was a black hole of time.
I'm good on that. I like where we're at, 2.5 hours and under. That's my wheelhouse. Unless there's an hour and a half rain delay and extra innings, then you have to just
I need
grin and bear.
Replays and stuff. I don't like rewinding constantly. But at least we have a day off today and some observation to make after the Sox game is over. So there's that at least. We have more on the Midday Show coming up.
It's time, isn't it?
It is.
Give the people that number. Tell them what we're doing.
The return of Who's Your Guy? 312-644-6767. It's back. It's back this week. And it's next on The Score. There it is. That's how we do it.